from HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 66, recorded Thursday, May 24th, 2007. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by Slash N Software Red Carpet Subscriptions, the most comprehensive solution for adding connectivity to your .NET and ASP.NET applications, with components for every major internet protocol. Online at www.nsoftware.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott and Carl discuss home networking.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes from HanselMinutes.com. I'm here with Scott Hanselman, back at the wheel. How are you, sir?
Yeah, we're back at the wheel. We are. We had a little bit of a week off there.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I went over to Rails Conference here in Portland.
Yeah, got a great interview there.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Last week.
So we were going to talk about home networking. Someone had emailed and said that they wanted to set up a home network. Now, I'm in no way a home networking expert, but I do have opinions, and I'm sure that you have opinions. So in this particular episode, probably the real information will come from those who decide to respond, visit the comments page, visit my blog, and we can talk about what you've done to set up home networking.
I know you're not talking to me right now, but I'm with you. I'm probably even less than you. I have an old wireless network. When there's gigabit and all that, I'm not at all home network heaven.
Right. Well, yeah, when you're putting together a home network, it's about deciding what it is you need to accomplish. My dad, the default router, the default, he basically got an all-in-one box from the cable company, right? So it's basically a router, a bridge, and a hub, and a wireless broadcaster all in one, right? So it handles the transition between the coax, the cable that comes in, the 75-ohm coax that comes in off the street.
Yeah.
Turns that into Ethernet, RJ45. It's got four ports on it, so it's a hub. The ports are independently have independent speeds, so it's a switch. And then it's got a wireless G, is it? 54,
yep.
Right?
Yeah, G is 54.
And that just works, right? So his main machine is plugged into that, and he's got wireless the rest of the house. And it works just fine, because all he's really trying to do is share the internet with a few laptops and print.
That's pretty much all I have.
Yeah, and that's fine for most folks. In that instance, you might take a look at the podcast that we did on alternative Linksys firmware. A lot of the firmware is getting better and better. I think that the open source community is pushing the competition to pushing the competition, the actual commercial competition, to make their stuff better. Linksys's firmware got better and better as people started pushing it. So they started saying, "Oh, I guess people do want this. They do want, detailed management of their universal plug and play. They do want a VPN back in. They want quality of service." So they started putting those features back in. But yeah, take a look at that podcast about alternative firmware. I've turned a number of people onto that who were not necessarily very technical, but they were able to download the binary, flash their firmware, and then make some simple changes like quality of service to make their voice over IP better. So, your first decision is, what do I need? So, how many devices do you have? If you've got a couple of machines and you're just surfing the net, maybe sharing a file or two, a wireless router is going to be the way to go. But if you're going to have a lot of machines, I would say devices, you have to ask yourself, how much management do I want of these? For me, I didn't realize how many things in my house had an IP address until I'd actually kind of went and cataloged them all, right? So I got a Mac, got my PC, got my wife's PC. That's pretty straightforward, pretty common, My wife, your PC, your kid's PC. I've got two Replay TVs, which are basically a DVR like a TiVo, except they have an Ethernet cable. So what is that? Let me see. Wife's PC, my PC, Mac, two Replays, that's five. I've got my Xbox, right? Xbox 360.
Right.
I got my Wii, which has a built-in wireless.
Yeah. Now, what do you need the wireless for, the Wii? Does it connect to the internet for
the
community?
Yeah, the Wii connects to the internet every evening, but the Wii also has runs Opera, the alternative browser, so I can browse the web on my big 42-inch screen.
Huh.
So I use the Wii to browse from within the you know, sometimes there's a program called MCE Browser, I think, from a guy named Anthony Park, where you can basically launch your Xbox 360, go back over to your Media Center PC, and then browse from there. But I end up using the Wii. It's very simple. It's tiny. And I just browse that way. It uses Opera, and it looks very nice.
Okay.
It's got great font scaling, so you can do it on a big screen and not worry too much about it. So anyway, I ended up with... Oh, I've also got a universal plug-and-play MP3 player. It's like a little appliance that sits on your receiver that lets you stream music from your collection, like the little iTunes brick that you can plug into the wall and
right.
it will pull from your iTunes library.
In the airport.
So I ended up with something like 12 or 13 different things that have IP addresses in the house. And that was surprising to me. But then I realized that and the Vonage. I use Vonage for my phone, so that was another thing. It starts to add up, at least for a gadget person. And I started to realize that there were different interrelationships between the IP addresses. People really expected the IP addresses to stay the same.
Well, that was my next question is, do you assign static IP addresses, and how do you resolve DNS and all that?
Right. So I do the in-between. I do a static lease, right? So the DHCP lease is based on the MAC address. So I assign static IPs, but I assign them based on MAC address.
Okay.
So when it sees my PC, I always know it'll be .1. It's just how I've got things set up.
Okay.
For me, in the baby room, there's an IP camera in the baby room. So that's another one. By taking the moment to assign static IP addresses, and particularly by doing them via a DHCP lease, not only does it make things easier in case name resolution fails. I tell you, I don't know why it happens, but a lot of routers have a heck of a time with their local DNS and the relationship between the outside and the inside.
Yeah.
So a lot of time I have trouble addressing my own machines internally. And I've debugged it over and over, and just sometimes Windows doesn't understand if you go, you know, whack server. Just can't find it.
I have the same issue.
Don't know why. Has it something to do with devices that are on the wireless network being bridged inappropriately with devices that are on the wired network, and maybe the name resolution is not passing between them? I don't know. But when those kind of things rear their head, I just make an entry in the hosts file, and having, of course, a static IP address, a non-moving IP address, makes that a lot easier. It also makes port forwarding easier. So when you're designing your network, first you got to figure out what's your inventory. If you know that you're only going to have a certain number of machines and maybe an occasional machine from work, you can lock things down by MAC address and say, not only will I lock my wireless down, where I only want to allow these IP addresses, but I'll only pass out an IP address via DHCP to this list of MAC addresses. You know, seems tedious, but once you've got that catalog, it's kind of nice to know that that you're a little bit more locked down even internally. So once you've done that inventory of the devices that you have in your house and you're setting up your IP addresses, then you can start thinking about port forwarding. You can do it yourself, like go into your router and say, I want port 80 to be forwarded over to this machine. Or you can let Universal Plug and Play, the automatic NAT stuff, do that. And so UPnP, some people have strong feelings about. Basically, this is a protocol that lets devices announce that they need to bust a hole in the firewall.
Right.
It could be a device. It could be a piece of software. So like Windows MSN Messenger announces that it needs a hole plugged in, you know, popped into the firewall. Your Xbox will do that. More than you think will do that. So what you might think about doing is taking a look at your router's advanced options and seeing if there's a place to view the table, the complete list of all holes that have been punched in your firewall. And then you can decide whether you want to punch them or not, through yourself or not. For example, sometimes I have trouble with those ports being open but then never closed again by the... There's like a morgue thread, but they're harmless. It's stuff like the voice over IP stuff for the Xbox. So I just, you know, just punch that hole ahead of time, and you won't have to worry about UPnP. You can then turn it off. So basically it's like the static DHCP stuff. You can count on the system to work every time, or you can just set it up ahead of time and be done with it. So I've got three or four holes that are popped in my firewall for things like when you and I do a DNR TV.
Right.
For some voice over IP things where I'd really rather not have the systems automatically open ports. Also, that's because there are a number of kind of Trojans and things that will open a firewall port for you, right? So when you have a protocol standard like that, anyone can use it. So then they can punch holes back into your firewall.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things I'm having trouble with is that I used to have Comcast, and I could go into my Comcast over port 80, and then I could log into my Windows home server. Home server has got a really great feature where you can tell it, give it a name, like a subdomain name, and it will automatically give you an externally addressable URL. So if I want to say, you know, see if Hanselman is available, and it'll give me hanselman.whateverfoo.com, automatically sets it up. I just associate it with my passport, and then I have an externally addressable URL too. It's the kind of thing that we've been doing for a long time as geeks with Dynamic DNS, dyndns.org. But to make an IP address you can't count on available from the outside, except they've built it into the administrative interface to home server. But when I switched over from Comcast to Fios or Fios from Verizon, which is what we use here in the States when we want fiber optic, they shut down port 80. They will not let you run anything over port 80. I can run over 8080. I can run over even 443, but I can't get anything out over port 80. Seems kind of silly that they're going to shut down port 80, but they'll let me open up any other port. And even though the terms of service say don't run a server, I just want to log in to my machine and, you know, administer things remotely. I discovered this, unfortunately, on a business trip where everything was set up. We had just switched over to Fios, and then I went to Vegas, and then I couldn't get back into my house. So you might want to think about what is your strategy for getting back into your home in a secure method. There are things like Hamachi. H-A-M-A-C-H-I. Hamachi is a VPN client that is a kind of a peer-to-peer VPN open source client that lets you create a virtual private network between any two machines, and it does all the NAT and network traversal for you. Basically, it lets you take any two machines and put them on a virtual subnet so that they could talk directly to each other. So Hamachi is one way that you could do that. There's all sorts of options around VPN. A lot of the VPN that's built into the routers that you'll get today, they'll work just fine with the basic out-of-the-box CHAP and PPTP, point-to-point tunneling protocol stuff that's built into to Windows. So the question is, you know, how are you going to get into your machine? Do you want it to be, I want to be on the same subnet, so I want to be into my network, right, which is different than I want to control my machine remotely. So there's a couple different things you might want to think about. Sometimes people don't like the idea of having the ability to get in on the same subnet. You know, for example, if I set up a VPN, someone gets in using my password, they've got full reign.
Right.
They might want to use something like go to my PC, but then you've got full control over a particular computer, and then you could potentially cause havoc that way. So you want to ask yourself what level of risk is appropriate. There's also things like folder share. Folder share, of course, lets you synchronize folders between machines and traverses networks automatically.
I got a question about folder share.
It also lets you grab files remotely. So sometimes all you need is a file. So why open up all those holes when you just want to grab a file?
Right. We had set up folder share before. And Windows Live Messenger then came out with a folder sharing technology. And I know Microsoft bought folder share. Is that the same stuff? Because it doesn't seem to work for me.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. When it came out, I immediately said, oh, this is clearly folder share technology.
That's what I thought.
You know, you're in MSN Messenger. It pops up a thing. It says Carl Franklin wants to have a sharing folder with you. And then immediately I said, ah, good. Finally a use for this stuff. But it never works for me. Frankly, the other thing that never works for me is video conferencing. You know, when was the last time you successfully got a video conference to work over a messenger? For me, it's about 3 out of 10. Just can't seem to get it to work unless I'm on the wide open, firewall-free internet.
Yeah.
If you're going to do stuff like that, that's another actually a good reason to forward a port and bust a few holes in your firewall if you're going to be doing video conferencing with your parents a lot. Yeah, the folder share stuff built into Messenger, Definitely it has some problems, but I do believe, yes, it is a folder share based technology. Although folder share works all the time. Never had a problem with it.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah. So the point there was ask yourself, what level of access do I need back into my own system from outside if I'm on the road, if any, and what do I want to do about it? I could leave my firewall completely locked down and use something like folder share to access an occasional file. Certainly make sure that you have a really strong password if you're going to be using any kind of remote technology like this.
Right.
Some people just port forward the RDP, the remote desktop port, or they use VNC, right? Virtual network computing, that VNC. You use tight VNC or ultra VNC?
Ultra VNC.
Yeah.
But I've used a few different ones. Ultra has the features that I need.
Right. Ultra has the ability to send a file, upload. You can auto-scale the graphics. You can auto-scale the color depth. Any one of these remote tools, or for something simpler, something like Copilot for occasional control, or a GoToMyPC.
Right.
Those all provide an attack vector, a bit of surface area that's being exposed for the evil people to get into. So when you're putting together a home network, you want to ask yourself, what is the access that I require, and how can I make it minimal but still functional?
Yeah.
Same things applies to things like, am I going to broadcast my SSID, right? You know, for a while I used my last name as my SSID, but then someone could potentially be driving down the street, see my last name, know that I live there, and find the house.
Yeah.
You can also use things like 802.11x and Kerberos and set up certificate-based authentication. So you can go to whatever level of careful that you want, but don't just turn on your router and forget about it. Right? You got to put a little thought into it.
Right.
So we've been talking about wireless, but here's something that I wanted to talk about early on, but I got caught up in it all. I really am a fan of wired networks. You get better performance?
Yeah, way better, especially with gigabit now being so cheap.
Oh,
price
God,
is coming
yeah,
down.
I mean, gigabit, it's crazy. You want to find out, can you pull the cable yourself? Are you building a house? Do you have walls that you can get into? Can you bring a professional cable puller in? Best thing I ever did, now it was a little expensive. I spent about $1,100, about $1,000. But I spent that $1,000 5 years ago, and I went and had cable pulled into every room in the house. Put in very nice plugs into the wall. Looks like a phone plug, right? RJ45 is just a wider version of RJ11. So people don't look at it and go, what's that weird thing on your wall? And I've got two network ports in every room in the house. And this is an important point. When your cable puller does this stuff and you start plugging in those ports, do an actual real world test.
Yes, before you
pay the guy.
Before you seal up the walls, right?
Exactly. So what we ended up doing was he wired the whole house. He did Cat 5 at the time. I think Cat 6 is what you want to do now. I'm not sure.
Yep.
So he did Cat 5 everywhere in the house. And then I started going to each room and I would watch a video over the new wired network and found two rooms where we were getting bad throughput.
Huh.
So we ended up moving some things around. We had hypothesized that perhaps we'd moved a cable by an electrical, too close to an electrical outlet. We jiggled some things around. We moved some things from side to side. He had some kind of a signal sensor that he would put on both sides. So then the guy in the attic could move things around. And then we got our full, nearly saturated. I think we ended up with like 60 or 70, because you're talking about a 100 megabit network.
Right.
But it saturates somewhere around 60 or 70 with a room for burst. But it's the difference between copying a 4 gig, virtual machine file and having it take less than an hour versus having it take all day.
Right.
So if you're moving big files around, if you're planning on doing especially streaming of high definition video, better than anybody.
Sure.
It requires huge amounts of bandwidth. And with the setup that I already had with the replay TVs, which are those DVRs, those are networked and they let me watch shows that are on the other. So I could be taping a show downstairs, watching it upstairs.
Did you ever find a need for more than two drops?
I did. Interesting. Very good point. So initially I thought, who in the world could need more than two drops per room?
Right. But I mean, if you've got like a TiVo and a Weave, there you go.
So what I ended up doing was I got these little adapters from, I think it was Geek. Was it Think Geek?
Right.
Or was it Geek Toys? One of those Geek websites where it's a Y adapter for Ethernet. Basically uses one of the unused pairs. You plug it in to the wall and it turns your one port into two. And then you have to have an identical adapter on the other side.
Huh.
So it's like a $10 thing and it'll automatically turn one port into two. That's a kind of a poor man's hub when it just, you don't want to go and plug in a hub and do all that. For the rooms that I've got a lot of stuff in, I ended up indeed mounting a hub on the wall and doing it that way.
Right.
So, yeah, in retrospect, I would have put in probably better quality wire. I would have got whatever the top of the line was at the time because you're only going to be in your wall once. My neighbor put in some PVC piping, so he's got room to pull more cable if he ever wanted to. So he could pull fiber optic if he felt like it. That's something that I was not clever enough to do.
Huh.
So if you are going to open up a wall or if you're going to do it from the ceiling and push down through the insulation, if you're in the States and you have a wood house with hollow walls, all my friends from outside the States laugh at us. They have very strong, you know, brick walls, concrete walls.
Right.
And they'll just run a wire and then cover it with a
conduit or something.
With a conduit or something. And then when they hear that our houses are made of paper and we're shoving cables in the walls through blown in puffed pink insulation, I think they think that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So I would have actually put tubes in and prepared myself to be able to pull other cables in the future. But for me, the Wii and the tablet PC are the only wireless things I think I have left. And I may actually come up with a way to just turn the wireless off entirely when I don't need it.
Right.
Because I find the wired, maybe I'm an old timer, but I think that there is value in wired installations, especially when you're talking about your main machine.
Right. So Scott, I have this, like you probably, you know, I subscribe to digital cable and I have this Motorola box, cable box that we've talked about before that most people have. And it seems it does have a network jack, but of course there's no way to use it that I know of. And it also has a USB port for external hard drives, but of course that doesn't work either. Is there any difference, any change in technology coming? Anything that you can do?
Well, if you're talking about the Motorola, I think it's the 6512.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
This is an interesting box because every once in a while, every 3 or 4 months, I'll just stop by, and this is weird of me, but I stop by my Comcast cable location. I bring my box with me, and I say, this isn't really working very well, and they'll give me another one, and it'll say, like, 6514A, and it'll have a slightly different thing going on in the back. And I've done a lot of Googling around about this. It's really a hardware platform. The Motorola guys have said, here's a hardware platform, here's a development kit, here's some things like recording services and things like that, but the hardware isn't baked in. So there's the Motorola kind of reference platform, there's the TiVo port implementation of the stuff onto the media, onto the Motorola platform.
Right.
There's also a TV guide implementation. So they've created this hardware platform. It's just that whoever's doing the development, if it's Comcast internal or the cable company or TV guide or whoever, they haven't chosen to exploit those things. Okay. Personally, I think it's because they're afraid of the support. But I suspect with the external hard drive issue, they're a little concerned about that content escaping.
Ah.
I personally would love nothing more than to plug in a 250-gig external hard drive because right now we've got stuff queuing up, you know, whole seasons of stuff.
Right. It doesn't take long for it to fill up, especially with HD content.
Yeah, I've only got like 17 hours on my little Motorola, and it's very frustrating. I've got a whole season of Dexter I need to catch up on, or I'm going
to
lose it.
And I've been tempted to Google anybody who's replaced the hard drive with a bigger version, but I've heard through the vine that sort of doesn't work.
Right, and then, of course, they've got an RJ45 plug in the back. Nothing happens when you plug into it.
Right.
The only device that I've seen that really makes use of home networking is the Replay TV, which is largely considered the Betamax of digital video players.
Yeah.
The Replay TV would allow you to stream between rooms, and it would also allow you the controversial feature of sending your show to a friend.
Wow.
This also involved opening ports, and there was a website called Pooply, POOPLI. I haven't checked in a while to see if it's up. And it's basically like a Craigslist for shows. So it would say, hey, I didn't see Dexter last night. Anybody got that? Oh, I have it. I'll send it to you. They add you as a friend in your friends list, and they send it to you. And you're not. It's not as bad as it sounds. It's not a sharing in the sense that they'll send it to you. You can watch it or delete it. Can't copy it. Can't do anything with it. Can't send it along. So it's not like Napster. It's just like, hey, your friend wants to share this episode of The Simpsons with you.
I got a quick anecdote, and then we'll wrap it up. And that is, I missed a show on TV, and so I decided to go with a BitTorrent client and find it and download it. And I did that, and then about a week later, the internet went down, and it was down. You know, I'm used to an outage for an hour or two. But when it goes for a day, I call. And when I called, I found out that they saw that I had downloaded that. They watched me. They watched my stream. And because
I know where this is going.
Because that was unauthorized, they freaking pulled the plug on my internet service.
Yeah, same thing happened to me. We talked about BitTorrent a while back, and I used BitTorrent to download a show that I had missed.
Right.
I think it was an episode of Heroes, and about 2 days later, I got a letter from the legal department saying, here's your IP address, here's the time you did it, here's the show, knock it off. And that was the day I stopped. I was like, you know, because lots of people downloaded stuff on Napster back in the day, back when we didn't think about it, but I've gotten so much more focused on kind of like intellectual property. If I want
right.
to download, if I want to, it's interesting, I'm more concerned about music. Because I think it directly affects the artist.
Well,
you know?
The thing is that it wasn't something I hadn't already paid for. I have cable. It was on
right,
cable.
Exactly.
I could have watched it, but I missed it. And
well, you know,
to
and
get.
That's and totally. So I definitely would encourage people not to use their BitTorrent clients to download TV shows,
right.
just because the legal exposure is too great.
I haven't figured it
but
out yet.
I checked out just today. NBC.com. It's fantastic. They've got every episode of Heroes. Very high quality video, full screen, available for watching online. And here's the part that's amazing to me. Like that's becoming more and more common. Almost every network here in the US has the shows go online a couple days after, so you can watch them if you miss them. But they include like a picture-in-picture cast commentary. So you've got basically two simultaneous video feeds. And it's interesting, they've got a button that says minimize audio. So basically it lets you turn down the mix on the main show and turn up the mix on the commentary. And they've got like the director, the writer, and the producer sitting in a chair watching the show with you and explaining what's going on.
Just like DVDs.
So stuff like that, when they make it easy for me and they provide extras that are as good or better than a DVD, I mean, it's not just commentary, but it's actual video commentary of them talking.
Yeah.
Then I'll be much less likely to go and try to hunt for something online via BitTorrent.
All right, Scott. Well, I think that just about covers everything I can think of in home networks.
Yeah. I mean, in conclusion, think about pulling cable if you can. Understand what your requirements are. Consider doing static DHCP leases. Be aware of what ports are busted open in your firewall, if any. Consider turning off UPnP if you think you can get away with it. Don't broadcast your wireless SSID, and also consider your wireless security options. And then think about how you're going to get back into your house if you're away, whether it be something like a remote control piece of software or a VPN or a private network like Hamachi.
Awesome. And with that, we'll talk to you later, Scott. Thanks. And we'll see you next week on Hansel Minutes.